From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today's program is built around one bill at the Utah legislature, a bill designed to protect gay people against discrimination. Lawmakers and members of the state's gay rights community have been trying to get it passed for 5 years now, and this year they say they're making progress. The bill was modeled after an ordinance in Salt Lake City, and for observers, what was striking about the ordinance was the role of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. The church supported the ordinance, even sent a representative to speak in favor of it. The statewide bill seems to have died this year, and the church seems to be staying out of it, not taking a position at all. Today in the program, we're asking why. We'll talk about the bill itself, but we're also talking about what the story may reflect about the LDS Church's evolving position on gay people and gay rights. Join us after the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. For about 5 years now, some lawmakers and members of Utah's gay rights community have been trying to get a statewide law passed, one that would ban employment and housing discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity. This time around, the group managed to get a Republican sponsor of the bill. Senator Steve Urquhart of St. George agreed to shepherd the measure through the legislature this year. Earlier this week, it became apparent the bill would probably not get passed again this year. But supporters still say they're making progress. The bill actually made it out of committee this year, not a mean feat for a bill that has generated its share of controversy. Today in the program, we're talking about the bill itself and how the political landscape seems to be shifting on the issue of gay rights. We're also interested in what this story may reflect about the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and its evolving position on homosexuality. The church had supported a similar ordinance in Salt Lake City, but this year church leaders have decided not to take a position on this bill, and it's not clear why. We wondered if it reflected some internal conflict or maybe some respectful disagreement anyway on the matter. We invite you to join the conversation today. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We invite you to join us on Facebook and on Twitter as well. We should mention that we invited representatives of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to join us today. They declined. They did send a statement, though, on the anti-discrimination bill. It mentions the church has not taken a position on the current bill, though it doesn't say why. Here's how it reads. It says the church is on record supporting non-discrimination protections for gay and lesbian citizens related to housing and employment. We also believe that any legislation should protect these rights while also preserving the rights of religious conscience to act in accordance with deeply held religious beliefs for individuals and for organizations. Joining us now on the program is Robert Gerke. He's a government reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune, covers the legislature, joining us today from the Capitol. And Robert Gerke, welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Doug. Happy to be here.
So briefly, help us understand the basics of the story. Let's start with the bill itself. This is Senate Bill 262. Before we get to where it came from, give us a sort of a thumbnail sketch of what it does, essentially.
Well, I mean, essentially, it would prohibit discrimination against people based on their sexual identity or gender identity or sexual orientation. And it's been advanced for the last several years by members of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender community. It's obviously been successful in a number of cities, Salt Lake City being the first, and now there's up to 17 cities that have housing and employment discrimination ordinances on the books. But each year up at the legislature trying to get this into a statewide law, struggled. It struggled, I guess, to say the least. This year, as you mentioned, the getting through committee was sort of the furthest it's gotten. But it still wasn't able to get a vote on the floor this session.
Let's talk about the circumstances the bill is trying to correct. If I'm a landlord, if I'm an employer, and I have a religious objection to homosexuality, can I choose not to rent to a gay person or a gay couple, or not hire a gay person in certain circumstances?
Well, in certain circumstances, and among landlords, you have to have at least 4 units that you're renting. If you have more than 4 units, it would apply to you, and you would be prohibited from doing that. And the individual, if they feel like they've been discriminated against based on those criteria, they could file a complaint. Since Salt Lake City has had their ordinance in place, there have been 3 complaints filed since 2009, so it's not something that's frequently cited.
Yeah.
As far as the religious exemption goes, you mentioned in the statement that the church sent, there's concerns that they express about exemptions for institutional and individual beliefs.
Right.
And I think that's kind of what has created problems for this bill in the past, is how do you define what somebody's individual religious belief is, and,
right.
and how do you create a carve-out for that without completely eviscerating the bill?
In your coverage of the story, you say that advocates for the LGBT community have been negotiating with leaders of the LDS Church for more than a year. Do you know the essence of those negotiations? What can you say about those negotiations?
Well, just that they've been, you know, this has been, I think going back to when Salt Lake City's ordinance took effect,
yeah.
there was a group created, and Jim DeBacchus was instrumental in creating that, the Leaders of Equality Utah and members of the LDS hierarchy. And that group has sort of carried forward, and they've created this sort of working dialogue that has sort of fostered these negotiations since then. You know, from what I'm told, they were very close, and it was coming down to some wordsmithing, and but they just weren't able to get there this session. You know, Senator DeBacchus said, you know, he said they were this close. He held his fingers just a little bit apart, and,
yeah.
but the deadline pressure of the 45-day session made it something that they just weren't able to push across the finish line.
Do you know what the sticking point was?
Well, I think, like as I mentioned, the sticking point I think was some of the trying to figure out how to write an exemption that
right.
the church was comfortable
yeah.
with. You know, as Salt Lake City has an institutional exemption that, you know, so if you work for KSL or something like that, or for Bonneville, you know, and some of the Bonneville corporations, you're exempt from it. How do you write an exemption from the state law that isn't overly broad, that doesn't, you know, completely where the exemption overwhelms the law itself and the purpose of the law? And so I think, you know, they're committed again to coming back and doing this again next year, trying to work through it. And maybe with another year, they can iron out these final details.
Back in 2009, you made reference to this. Salt Lake City passes this really similar piece of legislation, and I think we need to explain the LDS Church's involvement here, because I think what's striking about it, Robert, is the church was actively involved in supporting the ordinance. In fact, they actually sent a representative to the Salt Lake City Council meeting in November. This is November 2009. In fact, here's an excerpt. This is Michael Otterson speaking, again, a spokesman for The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
The Church supports these ordinances because they are fair and reasonable and do not do violence to the institution of marriage. They are also entirely consistent with the Church's prior position on these matters. The Church remains unequivocally committed to defending the bedrock foundation of marriage between a man and a woman.
So they support it. I mean, you can hear that there are some conditions that they're worried about. The issue of conscience, the issue of marriage is something they concern, that they're concerned about. But is it significant that they actually came to the meeting and actually said something in support of an ordinance like that?
I think it was at the time seen as very significant that they would publicly stand in a meeting where, you know, there are going to be television cameras, radio recordings mm-hmm. and so forth, and made that statement rather than just putting out a press release or something like that. I think it was a very public pronouncement, and it was important, I think, in getting this, gaining some acceptance for this at the time. And I think there was hope that this session, that there would be a similar public endorsement of the state law. The state law is subtly different because there are more enforcement mechanisms
yeah.
at the state's disposal if there was a violation alleged. But I think there was hope that there would be a public endorsement, a public pronouncement that they supported a state law, and they just weren't able to get there. And then the question becomes, if there was that sort of pronouncement, what that would have meant for the votes in the Senate and in the House.
Yeah.
You know, Senator Urquhart said when he was discussing this bill that it wasn't just one or two votes that it was lacking in from passage. It's considerable distance from getting the support it needed in the Senate this year.
Do you? I know you mentioned that one of the sticking points is, you know, carving out how these exemptions work and how they play out with institutions and individuals. But I'm wondering, do you have a sense of what would be the difference, the material difference between supporting an ordinance that had this, you know, there were the same kinds of concerns with the Salt Lake City ordinance. So why would the church be, you know, why would they support that and then not support or at least not make a statement on something larger, you know, that something that was broader, that went to the state itself? Do you have any sense of that?
Yeah, that's a tough question for me to ask because I'd have to be sort of understand a little bit better the church's concerns, I think, and they're not very, they haven't been very public about the negotiations and their involvement in it. But I do think that there are probably issues of scope here where you've got, you know, Salt Lake City is one thing, a state ordinance or a state law is a different thing. And also, I think the enforcement mechanism is probably makes it a higher stakes game, right?
Yeah,
I mean, you've got in the city, you've got a relatively toothless enforcement mechanism. At the state level, you actually have some teeth to this behind this, and so they wanted to make sure that they got it right and got the protections they needed without, as I mentioned, sort of completely eroding the fundamental purpose of the bill.
What's been the basic argument against the bill from others? It seems to be you quoted someone as saying it was one of these slippery slopes toward gay marriage. Does that get to it mostly?
That seems to be the predominant argument. In the committee hearing the other day, it was there were concerns expressed about whether it would undermine marriage. You know, Utah has this statute or this constitutional amendment prohibiting same-sex marriage, but there's concern that this is eroding that. You start recognizing protections for same-sex couples in state law, which is not something that's been done before, and you kind of they worry that it sort of plants the seeds to something that's going to grow and expand and then, you know, ultimately undermine the marriage between a man and a woman. Yeah. And I think that's you know, that's a position that is still widely held up here, and I think but you've seen some people like Senator Urquhart who has not necessarily been a proponent of this in the past, and this year has decided to be the first Republican to pick up the sponsorship of the bill and carry it forward. It's the first time they've had a Republican sponsor, which is pretty significant.
Yeah. Some members of the gay community seem to feel the landscape is shifting some. You quote Brandy Balkin of the gay rights organization Equality Utah saying that the tone and tenor of the conversation has changed. Do you think that's right? Are you sensing things shifting up there?
Well, I think it's changed significantly. I remember 5 years ago when this, you know, when roughly the same time Salt Lake City was enacting their ordinance, they were talking about doing this at a state level. And, you know, that every year for 5 years, this has kind of been at least a topic of discussion up here. But 5 years ago, the topic of discussion on the other side was, we're going to repeal all of the ordinances. We as the state legislature are going to overturn all of the ordinances that have been enacted. Mm. That's not the topic. That's not the topic of discussion. That really didn't even come up this year. And so, as Senator Urquhart said, this has kind of been an educational process from his standpoint, you know, that he sees more people who are coming around to his position. As Brandy mentions, they feel like they have more supporters publicly. You know, they point to polls that show that there's wide support for this type of anti-discrimination ordinance, but I think it also showed that they've still got a fair amount of work to do up here at the legislature if they're going to try to get this passed by a majority of the body.
Robert Gerke, a reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune, joined us from Utah's Capitol Hill. Robert, thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you.
Joining us now on the program is Stephen Urquhart. He is the Republican senator from St. George's District 29, sponsor of this year's anti-discrimination bill. And he stepped off of the floor to join us by phone. And Senator Urquhart, welcome. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Good to be on.
So, you know, I guess it seems surprising to some that a conservative Republican like yourself would raise this as an issue. What made you want to get involved with the bill? I mean, you said you came late to the party, but you're glad you're here.
Yeah, I'm very glad to be here. I think it's time. It's just, I heard the tail end of what Robert Gerke was saying, and it is an educational process. Brandy Balkin with Equality Utah, she came down to St. George 2 or 3 years ago and we just had a fantastic talk. And at that point, I told Brandy, I'm very sympathetic to this, but I can't support you. You know, my job is to represent my district, and I don't think that my district is there on this issue. And, you know, she was just fantastic and said, well, you know, here's some data on employment. Here's some stories about what's really going on and how much discrimination is out there. And, you know, please keep it in mind. And so I did, and, you know, talked with a bunch of people in my district and tried to better gauge their feelings. And, you know, I think my district is ready for this. I think that the state is ready for this.
You are quoted as saying that when you look along generational lines, more and more people are getting it as we go along. What do you think that means? Do you think that, again, is this a generational question in some way?
It largely is.
Yeah.
You know, you look at – so I'm 47, and folks, you know, I mean, I kind of feel like I'm right in that pivotal age.
Yeah.
And, you know, folks who tend to be – folks who are older than I am, you know, they're – this really is kind of an assault on a lot of the things that they hold dear. It's just like, you know, this is really a crazy concept to a lot of them. And folks who are younger than I am, to them, they don't even understand why this is an issue. I mean, there's really just this great divide. But I'll tell you what's interesting is I grew up in Houston, and I have had so many of my high school buddies contact me and just say, hey, so proud of you. This is awesome. And, you know, I've been doing this for 13 years, and I've done some things that I think are meaningful and significant, but that has never happened. And just kind of interesting how much it means to people all around. And that's been kind of a fascinating part of this experience, is the people who are reaching out to me. And, you know, I am a late arrival to this party, but just such warm outpourings of appreciation, and it's really neat to be here.
I wonder if you don't mind, if I could ask how your own views as a member of the LDS Church have they influenced the way you're evolving in all of this.
Boy, that's kind of a tough one. I'll tell you a bit about my progress on this, because, you know, obviously I've been thinking a lot about that lately. And my first real experience with this issue, I must have been 8 or so, maybe around that age. And so my mom went to get her hair done at someone's house. And there at the house, there was a man under one of those, you know, those old dryers that you pull down over your head, and was having, you know, curls and, I mean, a woman's hairdo. And so my brother and I, we thought that was the most amazing thing we'd ever seen. So, you know, I'm sure we were awful about it, and got out in the car, and, you know, I have felt the sting of my mother's left hand twice. She's a lefty, and she can pack a wallop. Yeah. And you know, that was the first time I ever felt it. And you know, you sure can't characterize my mother as a liberal, but you know, she's, I forget what she said, but she delivered the message loud and clear that we don't judge other people. We sure as hell don't make fun of them. And, you know, so that experience stuck with me. And so I hope it was a good lesson. Hopefully it's something that I've always lived by, that people are different and they have the right to be different.
Yeah.
So I've always kind of carried that with me. And, you know, the church, I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't mean to.
No, question.
I don't really have an answer how that has affected my views on this issue. It's more of a issue for me. I mean, you know, anti-discrimination, I always have been concerned about, okay, is it the correct thing to do to identify certain groups and say, we're going to do something different for this group? So I get those arguments.
Yeah.
But, you know, as I look at this, I think that the groups that we identify in our anti-discrimination laws, there's a reason they're there, and it's because there is discrimination. And so with people, there has been a lot of discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. So it is appropriate that they be included in this statute. And also I think the timing is right on this. So, you know, I view this more than through a religious perspective. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, I'm proud to be an elected official, and I've just kind of viewed it in that light of what's, you know, does it make sense and does my district support it?
Yeah. You think you'll get there next year?
That's sure the plan. I mean, I don't like losing issues up here, and I'm going to work it awfully hard, and I sure do appreciate the tenor that people are approaching this issue, and I'd even largely say on both sides. I mean, I'm getting some heated emails, but far fewer than I expected, and the conversations I'm having with constituents, there really is a lot of respect, even if they're against this, which speaks, I think, to the attitudinal shift that's going on. There really are, in my opinion, few people who are completely bent out of shape about this. We are having rational conversations, and where we're having rational conversations that we probably weren't just a few years ago, I think that this thing will be decided on the merits. And to me, the merits seem pretty clear that this should be included in our anti-discrimination law.
Senator Stephen Urquhart is the Republican representing Washington County's District 29, joined us from the Capitol. Senator, thanks very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now. 801-585-WEST, the number to join us. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We'll take a brief break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the fate of a piece of legislation designed to protect gay people and members of the LGBT community. It's a bill sponsored by a Republican from St. George that bans housing and employment discrimination. It was modeled after an ordinance in Salt Lake City, and at the time, the LDS Church actively supported it. For some reason, the church decided not to take a position on the bill, which applies those protections to the entire state. Today in the program, we're talking about the bill, and we invite you to join us, 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Joining us now on the phone is Jim DeBacchus. He represents Salt Lake City's 2nd District in the State Senate. He's also chair of the state's Democratic Party. He's joining us by phone from Capitol Hill. And Senator DeBacchus, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
It's always a pleasure, Doug.
Well, the bill has, I guess, died again this year, but you're framing this as a victory, not a setback.
It's a huge victory, Doug. You know, when you get right down to the nuts and bolts of the laws, they're not all that inclusive. So what really the Salt Lake City ordinance, which banned discrimination in housing and employment, and what our statewide effort did are as much symbolic as anything. And this time, we got the full, hearty, strong support from a dairyman from outside of Richmond, from Monroe, Senator Okerlund. We got the strong, hearty endorsement of Senator Urquhart, who's a conservative LDS man from St. George, Senator Knutson from Box Elder County. I mean, this is unprecedented. The message has started to break through, and I could be more thrilled if the bill passed. But the arc is there. Justice is around the corner, and I'm very proud of what the Utah Senate did.
What's changed?
You know, I think the great work of Equality Utah in meeting with individual senators and representatives around the state and explaining the bill and explaining and bringing LGBT members of the districts of these senators has been influential. Just the general trend of the country has changed with Herculean kind of strength and immediacy, I think, a lot further than and a lot faster than some of the pessimists had thought. So those events, I think, are shaking the grounds of what's fair and what's reasonable and what's equitable.
You've talked about, Senator, how the two sides were just, in the end, unable to come to an agreement as the deadline approached. What was the sticking point? Can you say?
No. I mean, we'll be back next week talking more. And Cliff Roski, the law professor at the U, and some of the church's attorneys couldn't quite get the right language. And I'm very hopeful that as we begin discussing again, that there's a warm congeniality and affection, actually, that has developed since Prop 8 and some very first kind of awkward meetings where now there's a genuine appreciation and respect, not only for the LGBT community by the church, but I think that a lot of people in the LGBT community have begun to understand that there's a lot more involvement by the LDS community in good things in our community that actually affect LGBT people than they may have been aware of. So it's been a great two-way conversation as these two kind of cultures that were all here in the basically under the same lantern that really didn't know each other.
I know you've got to be careful. I know you're trying to negotiate with the church about this and other things, but I have to ask, why would the LDS Church actively support an ordinance in Salt Lake and then not say anything on a statewide matter that's, I won't say it's identical, but it's quite similar? Why has the church decided not to get involved this time?
Well, there were really some substantial differences between the two bills. One put some penalty, the statewide, what we were going for, put some more teeth into the discrimination violations, and there were some issues there. And I'm really optimistic that given nobody likes to negotiate with a gun at their head, and unfortunately here the gun at our head was beyond both of our control, and that was the legislative calendar. So we just couldn't kind of get there with the exact right language, and I mean we're going to roll up our sleeves and get back to work and hopefully come up with something before the next session.
I wonder if the sticking point doesn't come down to this matter of religious conscience. And I wanted to ask you, as a matter of conscience, if a person feels that the behavior of gay people is immoral, should they have the right to not hire them or not rent them or provide them other services? This matter of conscience seems to be something that is reflected in some of the comments of people who are concerned about the scope of this bill. I want to play a comment from Republican Senator Stuart Reed. He represents Ogden's District 18, and he was speaking on March 7th at the hearing related to this bill. And I want to play this, and Senator Dukakis, have you respond, if you would. Here's Senator Reed.
Someone is going to have to demonstrate to me in a satisfactory way that homosexual activity is not immoral, because as long as I feel that way, I cannot advance policy that frankly encourages the societal acceptance of something I believe is immoral, which I believe this legislation does. I think it moves it forward to get the imprimatur of the government in support of an activity that I believe is fundamentally immoral. And I recognize and acknowledge that that position is discriminatory. But that's the point, isn't it?
Senator Dukakis, what do you make of that? Because you keep hearing this concern from church leaders as well. I won't at all say they agree with Stuart Reed, but you do keep hearing this question of conscience, religious conscience, the rights of freedom of religion, of people to be able to behave according to their conscience. What do you make of that?
Well, I think Senator Reed does not speak at all for the church. I don't think the position of the church is what Senator Reid's position is. I think Senator Reid's position is much more aligned with the Sutherland Institute, that very conservative think tank, and I think that his position is with Gail Ruzicka and the Eagle Forum. But I, while I'm uncomfortable characterizing the LDS Church's position, they did completely and wholeheartedly go with the Salt Lake City Ordinance. So I think Stuart Reid, Senator Reid, is is expressing a kind of old view. And I'm afraid that if we left it up to individual legislators or individual citizens to pass moral judgment on every group or every community before they gave them their full rights as American citizens, it would be a great disservice to America. I mean, the very fabric of what we believe is that we, out of many, we are one. And so to say my moral compass doesn't stand for this ethnic group or this religious creed or for LGBT people, therefore I want them to have lesser rights, just seems to fly in the face of the direction that America is going into.
Senator, do you have a moment to take a call?
Sure.
801-585-WEST, the number to join us. Erica is with us from Sandy. Erica, welcome.
Hi, I represent Mormons Building Bridges, and I'd like to say hi to everybody. And I was really interested in your question to Senator Urquhart, Doug, which was, how does your membership in the church fit in with your support of this kind of legislation? And he couldn't really get to an answer. He had this important experience as a child, but he couldn't really articulate it. And I would just say that that's really representative of a lot of Mormons now. What we've discovered in the last year is that there are a lot of Mormons who have this impulse, that feeling that they should not be treating LGBT people in any discriminatory way, and they're looking for ways to support this. They're feeling more like their religion is actually a reason to support non-discrimination, in that the church has gone on record as acknowledging that being gay is not a choice, and the church has supported other non-discrimination ordinances like what you've been talking about. And we're starting to embrace LGBT members as our own, and so we take care of our own. That's a very important part of our religious practice, and we want to have a community where no one is discriminated against. So that's all I have to say.
Glad you called. Senator DeBacchus, you want to respond?
Well, you brought up the idea of this new kind of untested legal theory called religious liberty. And the thrust of religious liberty is that the First Amendment is more important than any of the other amendments, and therefore the right to discriminate extends to an individual, so that an individual can trump non-discrimination. So I can say, you know what? My religion says that gay people are evil and wrong, and therefore I can legally discriminate against them. It is untested. It's not in effect in any state anywhere. And it is what I call the Bubba Amendment. It gives Bubba the right to look at gay people and say, now, I'm going to maintain my discrimination against these people. So the possibility that that becomes an accepted legal issue in our country is frightening to me, because it's a small leap to say, well, frankly, as in apartheid, my religion compels me not to give equal rights to people with dark skin, or to people from certain countries. Frankly, that is my deeply held, sincere religious opinion. This is a very, very, very bad idea. I don't believe that this is the value of the LDS Church, but I do believe that the groups like the Sutherland Institute and the Eagle Forum and a lot of what I would call fringy right groups are wallowing down to pick this up as the last defense against what they see as a tidal wave of acceptance in America that we are a country and we are a state that just doesn't discriminate, and they're having difficulty swallowing that.
That's Senator Jim DeBacchus. He represents Salt Lake City's 2nd District, chair of the Utah Democratic Party as well. Senator DeBacchus, thanks very much for the time.
It's always a pleasure, Doug. Thanks.
801-585-WEST, the number to join us. Erica, thanks very much for your call. We'll take a brief break, get back to more calls when we return. You're listening to Radio West. Okay. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the fate of a piece of legislation at Utah's Capitol Hill that protects gay people and members of the LGBT community, a bill sponsored by a Republican from St. George that bans housing and employment discrimination, modeled after an ordinance in Salt Lake City. At the time, the LDS Church actively supported that ordinance, but for some reason, the church is not taking a position on this statewide bill. And at this point in the conversation, we're asking why that is. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. D. Michael Quinn is joining us now. He's an independent historian whose work focuses on the LDS Church. He's the author of a number of books, among them the Mormon Hierarchy series. We should mention that Quinn was excommunicated from the LDS Church in 1993. He himself is gay. He's joining us by phone from his home in Claremont, California. And D. Michael Quinn, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Well, I guess the question that I want to have you help us work through is why it is that the LDS Church in a few years ago, trying to peg the date now offhand, I guess it was 2009, forgive me, would have supported a Salt Lake City ordinance which banned this kind of discrimination. And now a few years later, when those discrimination, when the provision, you know, is applied statewide, why they wouldn't. Let me ask you that as a basic question first, because we're going to try to break this down in a more general way. Do you have a sense of why would there be a difference between Salt Lake and the state in general?
I don't think it's obvious why, but I think it indicates that there have been divisions or disagreements within the highest leadership of the LDS Church about that question, and that those came to the surface when this became a statewide issue, and whether they were there in any significant way prior to the Salt Lake City Ordinance. If there were, the decision obviously was made to support the non-discrimination ordinance despite whatever misgiving might have existed at LDS headquarters. But the most recent statement indicates that there has been a reassessment or a significant disagreement with in applying the local position of the LDS Church to statewide social life and politics.
You know, you often hear of Vatican insiders, you know, people who know the players, who understand the factions, and they're able to sort of, you know, while they're not insiders necessarily, they're able to see how things are playing out. Is it harder to do that for the LDS Church?
It depends. Historically, the evidence has been available to historians about insider points of view on disagreements within the leadership on policy, as available in diaries, correspondence that became available for research years after the particular controversy. In some respects, depending on personalities of the leaders, they themselves, at the time of controversy, have publicized their disagreements. But in general, the historical record has been available years after. But in more recent history, particularly since the 1970s, that has not been the case because general authorities have been required to sign non-disclosure documents of legally binding documents that have severely restricted the ability of historians to access these kinds of diaries and correspondence that has been generated and that might provide that insider point of view since the 1970s.
Mm. No one will go on record with this, but sources have suggested to us that there are at least two factions among the LDS Church's highest leaders as it relates to the question of homosexuality. And I want to make this clear that what we're hearing is that it's not a bitter or rancorous kind of dispute going on among the hierarchy of the LDS Church, but that there is a disagreement among, you know, colleagues, fellow churchmen, brothers who love each other, respect each other, but who disagree on the way forward on this issue. What can you say about that, Michael Quinn?
Well, I can endorse what you said, that there is no rancorous feeling among those who have those different points of view. These are differing perspectives of people of goodwill, good heart, of men who see themselves as God's representatives on earth, seeking to do that which benefits the kingdom of God throughout the world, as the phrase is often expressed within Mormon culture and sayings. But I think that as a historian, I see a very significant non-gay perspective that one should have about these issues. And that is that beginning with Abraham Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation, civil rights laws did not allow religious exemptions, and for a very fundamental reason. And that is that religious exemptions for in civil rights provisions or laws would doom those civil rights provisions. For example, with the Emancipation Proclamation, in the American South, Roman Catholic dioceses, monasteries, and convents owned slaves.
Yeah.
And among the white Protestants of the South, it was virtually unanimous point of view that God allowed and sanctioned slavery, because the Old Testament provided detailed provisions for slavery, and the New Testament said, slaves, obey your masters. And so any kind of institutional religious exemption or personal conscience religious exemption to ending slavery would have perpetuated slavery. And with the Civil Rights Act of 1968, there was no religious exemption in its provisions against housing discrimination, because Southern Baptist colleges and universities segregated their dormitories by race or prohibited African Americans from living in their dormitories. And personal religious belief could be cited as a reason for a landlord not to rent to African Americans.
So that's
why you can't talk about providing for civil rights protections for any group if you allow a religious exemption, particularly for personal conscience.
So do you think that within the LDS Church, this is one of those boundaries they're working through? Because it seems like if we look at the statement, for example, that the church provided to us, on one hand, you have them supporting the principles of the ordinance, you know, of the law, the idea of supporting non-discrimination protections for gay and lesbian citizens. But then on the other hand, you see this, as they put it, concern that legislation should preserve the rights of religious conscience. So are they trying to have it both ways?
Well, not simply have it both ways. They're giving with one the right hand and taking away with the left. Because to allow individual conscience. And on this issue, when this senator or in for Ogden, mm-hmm. Utah senator,
Senator Reed,
refers to immorality, he's referring to a religiously based view of what is immoral. And by that view, before the Loving versus Virginia decision of the Supreme Court, Southerners could and did regard interracial marriage as immoral, and therefore they prohibited interracial marriage in Southern states, and they would not allow married couples who were interracially married outside the South to have housing. So this concept of what's immoral is typically, in American experience, based on one's belief in the Bible. It's a religiously based concept. And if you allow individual conscience, then you allow the prohibition of any of the restrictions implied or specified in the Old Testament, which somebody could cite a religious scripture for. Mm. So it fundamentally guts any non-discrimination provision if you allow it a religious exclusion on the basis of private belief. Now, I think a middle way in Utah would be to allow an institutional limitation on this non-discrimination ordinance. Therefore, the LDS Church in its church-owned dormitories would not be required to implement those non-discrimination policies. And for employment, although I disagree with this, it would nonetheless exempt the LDS Church from being required to hire or to maintain in employment people known to be LGBT.
Yeah.
I still think that's a terrible allowance for discrimination, but I think that might be the middle way. But if the law is going to allow individual conscience to discriminate against LGBT in the basis of housing or employment, then it's Jim Crow Utah, but applied to a different group. And when the United States has had to deal with severe discrimination in the past with other groups, it has not allowed individual conscience to trump civil rights legislation.
Let's take a call. 801-585-WEST is the number to join us. Kimberly has been waiting in Salt Lake. Kimberly, sorry for the wait. Welcome.
That's okay. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My timeline might be a little off here, but it seems like the church got a lot of really bad press with all their Prop 8 support in California, and maybe they got a lot of social pressure to then say, no, we don't want to discriminate against gay people. It's just a marriage issue from members in Salt Lake City, but maybe in the smaller communities throughout the state, they're getting opposite pressure, and that might be why they don't feel the need to support a statewide bill that would do the same thing.
Right. Well, Michael Quinn, let me have you sort of work through that. I mean, we've heard it essentially amounts to this, that on one hand, you have what could be called the old guard, you know, men of an older generation within the Mormon hierarchy who want to hold the line on the church's position related to gay people. And then you have, I guess, what would be another side, another faction, which is, again, gently pushing their brethren to evolve, to be a little bit more liberal in their perspective on that. Do you think that's about right?
Well, I see it as right, and it's also parallel to what happened during the 1960s with civil rights for blacks in Utah. In Utah in the 1960s, it was illegal for a black person to marry anyone who was identified as non-black. And the Hotel Utah discriminated by against blacks, refusing to admit blacks as residents in the Hotel Utah as church policy. The first presidency defined that as a religious requirement. And yet there were members of the leadership who were saying that the country has changed and is changing, and that those restrictions on racial identifying characteristics for rights of housing, rights of employment, should be abandoned. And yet they were not abandoned in Utah until the Civil Rights Act of 1968 forced their abandonment, which that law prohibited discrimination on the basis of race in housing and employment. And so even though there were, you could call liberal or progressive voices within the leadership of the LDS Church, that they those voices did not succeed in ending that kind of housing and employment discrimination until federal law required it.
So let me ask you this, because we've got less than a minute left. What does that mean? What you're saying is essentially that there's going to have to be public policy or a law that's going to eventually push the church forward.
That's my view.
D. Michael Quinn, he's an independent historian, author of The Mormon Hierarchy, joined us by phone from his home in Claremont, California. And Michael Quinn, thank you very much again for joining
us. Thank you for the invitation.
We invite you to continue the conversation by going to our website, radiowest.kuer.org. We'd like to hear what you have to say about all of this. Radio West, of course, a production of KUER News. Our thanks to Susan Anderson and Taylor Almond. Technical direction from Mike Anderson. The show produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.